Does anyone remember anything from the presentation I gave yesterday? Yes. What is the deep meaning of that? Yes, it is exactly what we're thinking of. It's specifically what we are desiring, because what we desire dictates how we think and what we think. Very, very important to keep our desires proper. There is an old saying that every desire is a prayer. And Krishna very, very kindly will fulfill our prayers. All of them. If he so desires. He is, of course, independent. So therefore, the conclusion was... Yes, that was the method, the methodology. The conclusion was that we should hear and chant Shravanam Kirtanam Smaranam Vishnu. I can't. We should hear and chant about Krishna and remember Krishna, so that Krishna, thoughts about Krishna, affectionate, loving, attached thoughts about Krishna completely die and color our consciousness. This is one of Prabhupada's great gifts in starting the Krishna consciousness movement. Is that the movement is so big, and it has such an incredible mission. Prabhupada once told Jagatrini Mataji and myself, when we were sitting with him in the Philippines, in Manila, he said, "It is my desire to make everyone in the universe Krishna conscious." And then he said, "Please help me with that desire, fulfill that desire." So do you think within the scope of that desire to make everyone in the universe Krishna conscious, you can find a space, a position for you so you can do something to help Prabhupada in this? Everyone. It is such a big, big, all-consuming mission that everyone can find something to do. And use anything, and this is specifically a gift, that everything, yuktavairagya, with detachment, everything, utility is the principle, that everything could be used in this mission. But please always remember that purity is the force, and without purity being the force, utility is the principle, becomes completely ruined. Because instead of using everything in Krishna's service, I take my percentage, at least a percentage. Maybe I'll give Krishna something, but I want to be the center, the enjoyer. So that mentality, it is in our interest not to maintain that mentality. It is in our interest to maintain a Krishna conscious, a Krishna centered. Anya bilasita sanyam gyanakama anavrita anukulena Krishna nashilanam. The sarup lakshana, the primary characteristic of pure devotional service, is a continuous cultivation of the attempt to please Krishna. And here, in the shelter of Giriraj, we are in the shelter of he who pleases Krishna in every way. Haridasa Vajo. Hantayan Adriyadasa, Haridasa Vajo. And those words, calling, glorifying Giriraj, who did they come from? From whose lotus mouth? The gopis, but Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, specific, everyone says the gopis, but and it's true, but, and it's in the Venu Gita, the 21st chapter of the 10th canto, the gopis are speaking. But Srila Raghunath Das Goswami specifically says those words came from the lotus mouth of Srimati Radharani herself, glorifying Giriraj. So what association we are getting. So if you remember also, one of the the points that Prabhupada made in the lecture that we heard was that if we think that if we don't keep in our mind that Krishna is God, Sat Aishwarya Purna. What does that mean? Sat Aishwarya Purna. He's full. He has complete simultaneously. He possesses all, first one, or one? Strength. He's unlimitedly strong, unlimitedly powerful, unlimitedly beautiful. Try to conceive, even though it is impossible for us to conceive, of what unlimited beauty is. The world goes mad after a beautiful person. Female, male. So attractive. But that beauty is just the smallest bit of a drop that Krishna, due to that person's piety, has been addicted, that male or female, with some physical beauty. But that's a drop of the unlimited ocean of Krishna's beauty. Every part of Krishna's body is beautiful. From what is the most beautiful part of Krishna's body? Does anyone know? Badanam? Badanam? His what? His sweet smile. It is compared to madhusmitam, smritam. Excuse me. It is compared to madhugandhi. It is compared to the fragrance of honey. But we'll talk about this later. We won't go in that direction right now. But we should remember that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's unlimitedly powerful. He's unlimitedly wealthy. That means wealth is so much chased after in this world because wealth means power. And power is required to control, and control is required to enjoy. Without power, you cannot control, and without controlling, you cannot enjoy. Because everything happens what you don't want to happen. Krishna is unlimitedly powerful, wealthy, strong, renounced, beautiful, and all-knowing. He knows everything. All that it is that is can be known. He knows. Omniscient. So that all-powerful, supreme personality of Godhead, what does he do for his pleasure? This is a most intriguing question. He already is, he's made of Satchidananda Vigraha. Now what does he do for his pleasure? What does the king who is so powerful do in the innermost section of his palace with his most trusted, dearest, loving friends and associates? The common people just simply have no idea what the king does. The common people, the common spiritualists, have no idea how Krishna actually gets his pleasure. And therefore their concept of him, it is so full of awe and reverence. And it appears as if he gets his pleasure sitting on a throne. I once saw a little cartoon where God is sitting in front of his computer, and on the screen, he's got his finger just right about to press the enter button on the computer. And there's this poor fellow walking down the road. This is in the cartoon. And he's walking in front of a building. And from the building, you see a rope. And from the rope, you see a piano hanging. And the poor fellow is walking down the road, and he's about to walk right beneath the piano, and God's there with his finger on the enter button to press, okay, now's the time to drop the piano on his head. If he's the controller, that's why in Western theology, practically speaking, they can't, because they think that this is all there is to God, that he's the controller. They can't get beyond the question, does he really exist in such a world that is so full of horrible things? They never really get beyond that question. What to speak of entering into that supreme person's most intimate quarters, where he is enjoying, he manifests his full personality there. The fullest personality, all of himself he manifests. When the king is sitting on his throne, he has to be very grave. Every once in a while he makes a small joke. But he cannot manifest his whole nature, everything that he loves, what he likes to do. A little officially he can do that. But Krishna especially, or we could even say only in Vrindavan, it's a full, his activities are a full manifestation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Who he actually is in private. How he gets his pleasure. Very, very, very intimate. Very confidential. Should not be misused, this transcendental knowledge and information. What we will do now, Krishna willing, we will enter Krishna's, we are already sitting here, we've already entered, but we will hear something, because we must hear about Krishna. We will take a look at Krishna as he intimately acts with his cowherd boyfriends. This is described by Srila Sukadeva Goswami in the 12th chapter of the 10th canto. Does anyone know what that chapter is entitled? Or what is it about, the 12th chapter? Yes. Krishna, this is while after Krishna has left Gokul, and they're going to Nandagaon. They stop in at Chattikar, very close to Krishna Balaram Mandir. And Krishna, he's just very, very, very young at that time. He's manifesting his transcendental, eternal Satchitananda body. As if a 4 or 5 year old. And prior to that time, because Krishna is Rasaraj, his desire, because this point, people who are not aware of who Krishna is, they cannot understand what he does for pleasure. People think, again, he's there with his finger on the enter button. And people think that his pleasure is having all these little people, all of us, worshipping him and offering him prayers and fearing him. What kind of a person gets his pleasure out of that? Does he have some kind of a problem? He's the controller. He's the organizer of everything. And he's organized so everyone has to pay their obeisances and pray to him. Does he have some kind of a lack in his consciousness that he needs that? And that's how he gets his pleasure? But Krishna is a person who's completely different from that. Krishna gets his pleasure from increasing the pleasure, the ecstasy of his loving devotees. He wants to increase everyone's ecstasy to the highest amount. The jiva soul can, although tiny, can experience greater pleasure than Krishna himself. This is what Krishna wants to award to the living entities. More pleasure than he experiences. Pleasure that he wants to taste, and therefore to taste the pleasure of serving him. He comes as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is thinking, I want to taste that pleasure. I want to taste the pleasure that the foremost of the lovers of Krishna, Srimati Radharani, tastes. The pleasure of serving Krishna. He wants to award that which is greater than his own pleasure. This is Krishna. And if we want to understand the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan, this is the main essential principle to understand, that whatever appears to be going on, all the devotees, they have one desire, and that is to please Krishna. They love him completely, fully. They are willing to do anything to give Krishna's pleasure. To do anything, to not do anything, to please Krishna. And Krishna himself, that personality who is Sat Aishwarya Purna, Aham Savasya Prabhavo Mattaksavam Pravartate, the one whom everything is coming from, Sutre Mani Ginaiva, everything, all of reality rests upon him as pearls are strung on a thread. His desire and his activities are just to increase the pleasure, the ecstasy of the devotees who love him. And this is what is going on in Vrindavan. It is just an exchanges of the highest, most unselfish form of love. Or that is actually, it is love with not the slightest tinge of lust. And therefore Srila Narottama Das Thakur has described prema bhakti, or the love of the devotees for Krishna, as more pure than gold that has been purified 100 times in fire. Each time a little bit of impurity is taken out, and a little more a second time, until it is 100% pure gold. Pure love of the most intimate kind. That is what's going on in Vrindavan, the exchange between Krishna and his devotees. Let us read something of this, but please, my dear devotees, please keep this in mind. This is the most extraordinary thing, what we will hear. And the devotees, or Krishna's associates, they are experiencing during these pastimes the most incredible, continuous, highest, sublime, pure ecstasy in variety. One different variety of ecstasy after another. So this is the 12th chapter. The beginning of this chapter describes Krishna, because Krishna and the cowherd boys, in Krishna's earliest years, the ecstasies are primarily exchanged with those in parental ras, his parents, Vatsalya ras. And at this time, Krishna's beginning, he's desiring to exchange ecstasy with his sakas, his friends. So Krishna, again and again, every day, asks Nanda Maharaj, please, we can take out the calves, because they're too young to take out the cows at this time, 4 or 5 years old. But we can take out the calves. We can take them out and graze. You won't have to worry about them anymore. The calves go out for a short time because they need more attention and from their mothers, so they can't go out too long. So, Father, please let it. No, my son, you are too young. You are too young. No, Father, we are old enough, we are strong, and we are all so intelligent. And indeed, Krishna is so intelligent, and he's but to increase the ecstasies of Nandavaras. He's speaking like this, because what does Nandavaras? He's fearing, oh my son, you are such a little boy. Due to the love, due to the Stai Bhava of Vatsalya Shuddha Prem, of parental love, if one has to read Nectar Devotion, Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu, carefully to understand, but it is based on one's Stai Bhav. Unless there is a basic love, then there is no rasa generated. There is no incredibly unlimited sweet taste generated unless it is based on a particular Stai Bhav or love. So because of that love, everything that Krishna does, every cute little thing Krishna does, churns Nanda Maharaj's heart in ecstasy. And different waves of ecstasy come up in the ocean of his loving heart. And finally, after every day hearing Krishna, please, please let us go out. And all the coward boys are saying yes, because they want Krishna to be alone with Krishna so that they can play, because boys always want to be away from their parents and go to play and do things. And boys always want to do that because in this world it's a reflection of what happens in Goloka Vrindavan, to churn the ecstasy of their sakaras. And Nanda Maharaj says, all right, Krishna. And Mother Yasoda says, all right, Krishna. But don't be... And tells this boy, you please take care of Krishna and don't let him out of your sight for 1 minute. Balaram, you take care of Krishna. You keep him always... Yes, Mother. Mayi. Yes, Mayi. Yes. Boys, of course, will say anything so that they can... Yes, enough for one. They just want to be with Krishna continuously. So, Sukadeva Goswami describes in the first verse of this 12th chapter, O King, he's speaking to Maharaj Prickett, because this is taking place, that by the time the 10th canto is being read, Sukadeva Goswami, Maharaj Prickett, only has 3 more days to live, approximately. And he wants to bring him to the point, Sukadeva, his Guru Maharaj, wants to bring him to the point of hearing the most ecstatic pastimes of Krishna, the activities of Krishna, because the activities of Krishna and Krishna are exactly the same. And when the speaker is right and the hearer is right, one can experience Krishna when hearing about Krishna. Hearing and hearing and hearing and hearing about Krishna until the heart becomes completely cleansed of everything but love for Krishna. So after herding the calves for many days, Sukadeva Goswami explains, one day Krishna decided to take his boyfriends for a picnic in the forest of Vrindavan. They wanted to go for a picnic. Raise your hand if you've ever been on a picnic with your friends or loved ones. Quite nice. Have you ever been on a picnic with your enemies and people that you don't like? No. And if you have been, it's torture having to make a fake smile for all day long. And then as soon as you're away from it, it's not the activity that brings pleasure, it's love, it's who you're with, it's the rasa, it's the relationships that bring pleasure. You can do the same thing with one group of people and it's torture. And the same thing with another group of people and all you do is think about how wonderful it is. So one day, Krishna decided to take his breakfast as a picnic in the forest. And having risen early in the morning, he blew his bugle made out of a horn. Because all the cowherd boys, they had certain things they would have to carry. Does anyone, usually cow's horn, or the bull's horn, is one thing, and they would carry that on a rope. They would put a rope, and they would dress like this, and they would carry it over here. What else would they carry with them always? A stick. Well, but with the calves, with the cows, they have a bigger stick where they, and you can see this today all over Braja. They have sticks with another stick at the end, so they hit the cows sometimes quite firmly. But with the calves, just a little stick. That's all that's required, because the calves are so gentle and small. And what else do they have? They have a rope, because that's required sometimes. So, Krishna went out early, and he, using his bugle, he began to call all the cowherd boys to come. And Krishna, we know, we hear more about Krishna's playing his flute, how Krishna's flute is filled with the breath of Krishna, which is none different from Krishna, and it's ecstasy. And Krishna's bugle, same as the flute, it can call specific people. And the cowherd boys would always keep this with them. For what purpose? So that in case they had to make a loud sound when they're out in the forest and call their friends, or if a calf was lost or something, they could call them. But when Krishna would play his bugle, he would come out and call each of the boys. He went to each of the boys' house early in the morning. And he would call them with his bugle. And he would call in each and every one of them by name. Oh, Sudama, come now. Let us go. Wake up. Wake up. Come. Let us go to the forest. We're having a picnic today. And what do you think the boys were thinking? Because their whole life was only Krishna. Did they have to wake up? No. Because all night long they would be coming to Yasoda and Nanda Maharaja's house. Oh, Krishna! We're already late. Come, wake up. All night long they're becoming, Krishna, Kanaya, Kanaya. Yes, Kanaya, come. And Mother Yasoda would come. Be quiet. Krishna's sleeping. Go home. Can't you see? It's still dark. But they couldn't see anything. They could only see and Krishna and feel separation from Krishna. We hear Mahaprabhu's mood of Ashleshava Padaratam Panastumam. And yugayutam nameshena a yuga, or a moment without Krishna, namesha is a moment without Krishna, seems like thousands of years, 12 years or more. That's one, Prabhupada originally translated a yuga as 12 years or more, because that's one of the meanings of yuga, 12 years. But one moment separation from Krishna is unlimitedly painful. Why? Just imagine how much love has to be in the heart for a moment to be unlimitedly painful. When the cowherd boys are with Krishna, with the cows, and there's thousands of cows, and unlimited cows practically. We'll hear later that the word used is asankhya, which means an uncountable number. Sankhya means to count. Asankhya means an uncountable number. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives a definition to that uncountable number as 1 followed by 17 zeros. That's how many calves went with Krishna on this day. Unlimited cows, unlimited calves. Just imagine what it would take when the love, the quality of love that these residents of Vrindavan have, that when they're herding the cows, if Krishna would walk behind a tree and they wouldn't see him for one moment, it would be torture. And how the gopis would criticize Brahma for giving them the blinking, making eyes that blink so they couldn't see Krishna. So can we actually imagine this? No, we can't actually imagine it. But we should try to understand what it is like, what the spiritual world is made of, and why it is such ecstasy. Because the love is of this quality. Without love, well, then you're in the material world. And that's the curse of the material world is that it is loveless. And why is it loveless? Because we're envious of Krishna. And what is the result of our envy of Krishna? That we are placed in a situation where we have our own bubble of illusion, our consciousness in which we are imagining that we are the center of existence. And everyone has their own bubble, walking around with their own big bubble. I am the center of existence. No one is allowed in to our bubble of illusion, because it's my illusion, because I'm the center of it. And in your illusion, you're the center. In your illusion, you're the center. So as long as we have that false ego, we cannot enter. It is not that Krishna keeps us out of Vrindavan. It is this bubble of illusion that I am the center, that I don't want to be a servant, I want to be the master. Ishwaraham. Aham bhogi, siddaham balavan sukhi. This is why I'm in the material world. And Krishna, on the other hand, yeyetam mam prapadyante tams tathaiva bhajamyaham. As much as we want to be with him, he will. We used to hear when we first started chanting that if we take one step to Krishna, that he takes how many to us? 10, 100, 1,000. I've heard, yes, if you want him to take 1,000 and you really, he will take that. He will bring you there immediately. Kadvanga Maharaj surrendered to Krishna in a moment. But the problem is that we can't bluff Krishna. It is based on love. So Krishna called all the boys individually, as he would call the gopis by playing the flute, and they would know, oh, Krishna is calling me specifically. The flute sound would enter their ears and go right into their heart and pull them practically to Krishna. So the buffalo horn or the bugle would pull Krishna, would pull the coward boys who were just simply waiting. When can I see Krishna? When can I see Krishna? Because their love was always overflowing. So he woke all the coward boys and calves. So the calves were also just waiting, because they're in Vrindavan. And the forest of Vrindavan is also waiting. And the deer are waiting. And the trees of Vrindavan and the grass of Vrindavan is waiting. And in that waiting, there's one kind of ecstasy. When will Krishna come? And for the trees, when will I be able to make my offering of the shade, of the fruit, the peacocks? When will I be able to dance for Krishna and offer Krishna my peacock feathers? Why? For Krishna's pleasure. This is the pleasure of the soul. To give oneself, one's individuality, whatever one has, fully with love to Krishna. What one is, give that to Krishna. And all the variety of individual souls, even though Krishna is not lacking anything yet, with that variety it increases Krishna's ecstasy. Unlimitedly Krishna's ecstasy increases. How wonderful. So he called all the boys, then Krishna and the boys, and so Vrindavan Forest was waiting. The cowherd boys and the calves were waiting. And now it was the turn of Mother Yasoda to cry and wait. Oh, Krishna's leaving. When will he come back? Mother Yasoda, it's been 2 minutes since he's left. it's not time for him to come back yet. Is he coming back yet? We should send someone out. He must be so hungry. Every hour, Mother Yasoda, everyone would be cooking. But all of Vrindavan, the town of Vrindavan was just waiting. When will Krishna come back? And the cowherd boys were so happy. And the calves and the Vrindavan forest were so happy. And there were thousands, again, there were thousands and millions of calves, and they would all come out of the different boys' homes, and then they would go into one big group and go out. And then when they would return in the afternoon, then the group would break apart and they would go to their respective places. So, then Krishna and the boys, keeping their respective group of calves before them, proceeded from Brajabhumi to the forest. To Braja. And the word, it's Vinir Gato Vatsa Parat Saro Hari. So they kept their Vatsa means calf, Parat Sara, keeping the respective the groups of calves in front. Vinirgata, they came out of Vrindavan, the town of Vrindavan, or because they were in Vrindavan at that time, with Hari. Hari came out. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when describing the Atmarama verse to Sanatana Goswami, he defines there are unlimited meanings of the word Hari. But does anyone know how he gives two that are the ones that are most prominent? Does anyone remember what any of them are, those two are? I also didn't know, but I looked it up. And Hari, he says it's Sarva Amangala Hari. Hari means he who takes away. Amangala means auspicious, inauspiciousness. Sarva, he who takes away everything inauspicious. And the other one is Prema Diya Hari. He is the one, Hari, he gives Prema. Takes away inauspiciousness, darkness, and gives prema or love. Text 2. At that time, hundreds and thousands of cowherd boys came out of their respective homes in Brajabhumi. How is it possible to there to be an unlimited number of cowherd boys, an unlimited number of calves? How is it possible? Because it's possible because reality, what we conceive of as reality, as Maharaj mentioned yesterday, with our dualistic logic, we cannot conceive reality in fact, because we are stuck in the bubble of our illusion. We perceive, even if there is an accident, everyone knows of this fact, if there is an accident, and you ask, and two cars collide, and you ask 15 people what happened to describe it, and they will come up, each one will come up with a different scenario of what happened. Because no one sees reality. And if there is a fight, it's always the other person's fault who's causing it. We see a little part of reality, a tiny, insignificant part of reality. And to think that tiny part is the whole thing, is all of reality, is illusion. So we, conceiving our tiny part as of perception, as the totality of reality, is illusion. Well, in fact, Krishna, is the only one who understands reality. Consider this point, my dear devotees, when something happens to you and you say and think that it is bad and unfortunate. Consider that from Krishna's point of view, is it truly unfortunate? Is it truly fortunate? Practically speaking, we can't say, but because Krishna is Sarva Amangala Hari, takes away inauspiciousness. The devotees have faith that everything that happens is within his mercy and it is for their benefit. And therefore they can be free from anxiety. They alone can become free from anxiety in this world. If their faith and realization is deep enough to accept that in fact, and Prabhupada explains this in the Bhagavad Gita in one of his purports, that in fact we are living in Krishna's mercy. This is the vision of a devotee. So how is it possible that unlimited calves and unlimited cows and unlimited gopas, and how is there room enough for all the devotees forevermore who want to go and join Krishna and Vrindavan? And not only is there unlimited, there's going to be more coming. How is it possible? Because reality is a servant of Krishna. It is meant to increase Krishna's pleasure. That is the definition of reality. There is time in the spiritual world, but there is not past, present, and future like in this world, where it forces so many undesirable things on us, whether we like it or not. But reality, time in the spirit, it serves Krishna. A night can go on forever practically. And there can be simultaneous different times going on in different places. It is wonderful.